You're listening to 99.1 WQRT LP, and welcome to Radio Free Book Club for January 2024. I'm Ken Honeywell. I'm a writer and reader from Indianapolis, and Happy New Year, everybody. We're recording this on January 2nd, so we're all just on day two of our resolutions. I've kept mine so far. I don't know if all of you have. I don't think I actually have any, but for what it's worth, I haven't strayed from what I wanted to do. So this show doesn't air for a couple of weeks, and we'll see how we're doing at that point. But we're starting off the new year, I think, with a banger. It's R.F. Kuang's 2023 novel, Yellow Face, kind of a sharp, sly commentary on the state of the publishing world today. Brings up all kinds of interesting and timely questions, which we'll get to in some detail. Prior to Yellow Face, Kuang was known principally as a writer of speculative fiction, perhaps most notably for her 2022 novel, Babel, or The Necessity of Violence, An Arcane History of the Oxford Translators Revolution. There are two colons in that title. That actually debuted at number one on the New York Times bestseller list, and it won the 2022 Nebula Award for Best Novel. Yellow Face is her first foray into literary fiction, and we have an all-star team of Radio Free Book Club members to break it all down for you. So let's just start with some introductions. Hello, Barb.
Why, hello, Ken.
Would you please let us know who you are and
okay? I think I can do that.
And how notable you are?
Well, I don't know about that, but I know that I'm Barb Shoup, and that I am the author of some novels and some other things, and the writer in residence at the Indiana Writers Center.
Thank you, Barb. Glad you're here. Happy New Year.
You too.
Hello, Dan.
I'm Dan Barden, and I'm nominally a professor at Butler University and a writer, and I don't know, I wanted to say something else cute, but I can't
think of it. Weren't you a flaneur last time?
I'm a flaneur. Okay. I am a flaneur. Thank
what
you
does that
much.
Mean?
Professional walker.
Do you get paid for that?
No.
Then it's not professional.
It's not professional.
Sorry.
I'm a walker. I'm a person who devotes themselves to walkers.
Okay,
the French
there you
word
go.
For walking.
Okay.
Excellent.
That'll work.
Hello. Hello, Tracy.
Hello. Tracy Kumbe, writer, baker.
Yeah. What you baking?
What am I baking? I actually have been making, sourdough discard crumpets. Did I tell you that?
No, but I make those all the time.
Oh, spectacular.
It's like my number one thing to make with discard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love them. My latest baking is I made potato bread out of leftover mashed potatoes.
Nice.
Very impressive.
Yeah, it was excellent.
Very impressive.
Well, thank you, everybody. Really happy to be spending the first part of the new year with you. And before we start talking about Yellow Face, I need to remind listeners that we are going to spoil the living heck out of the book. So if you're going to read it, you might want to wait to listen to the show, which thankfully is easy because you can find this and all the episodes of Radio Free Book Club on Mixcloud, on WQRT.org, and on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, just about anywhere you stream podcasts. In the meantime, you might want to listen to some of WQRT's other great programming, including maybe give a listen to Ann Laker's excellent film podcast, Flicks Fix. And please come back later for our discussion of R.F. Kuang's Yellow Face. So let's start talking about Yellow Face. Quickly, before we do, has anyone read any R.F. Kuang before?
No, had not.
I read Babel.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
What'd you think?
It was really interesting in a lot of ways. I felt like it was longer than it needed to be. It seemed like it took forever. But I found it interesting. I'm not usually a fan of speculative fiction, but this grabbed me a bit more than others.
Yeah, I haven't read it. I am a reader of speculative fiction, and I think maybe just the page count deterred me. It seemed like a big
book. It was really
big
long.
Book. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was not familiar with her. I was familiar with her, but hadn't read anything of hers before. Someone want to give a quick synopsis of the book or an opening, Tracy?
Okay, so this is about a writer who, after being very envious of her much more successful writer friend, finds herself in circumstances wherein she can take a manuscript that nobody knows about, and then she publishes it after some rewriting as her own.
Yeah, yeah, and hijinks ensue.
They do indeed.
Yeah. What'd you think, just overall, Barb?
I was mesmerized by this book. I felt like it was really a picture of the way things are for a lot of writers right now. It gave a pretty good, I don't know, accounting of all the various facets of publishing a book, kind of from the beginning to when the book starts to not be anywhere anymore. Plus, it was just a great, I couldn't put it down. I just kept turning the pages. I thought it was good. I liked it.
Yeah. Dan, what do you think?
Very similar to Barb, I thought it was just such a primer. It's a ridiculous comparison, but it's like I could talk about this book the way some people talk about Moby Dick, you know, like that it's just, it's a novel and it's a good novel, but it's also this primer on the publishing industry. It's a primer on writing. It's a primer on how to approach, people that you're jealous of. It's just there's a manual aspect to the book. I mean, I just kept ticking off things that she finds a way to talk about in our present culture that were tremendously interesting to me. And also, you know, and it's probably the best thing that I can say about a novel is that there were a lot of flaws to this novel. And every time I noticed one of them, I said, I don't care. Sorry.
I noticed the primer aspect of it the second time around. Yeah. It really just covered everything. It gave you something to think about, every aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tracy.
And you get to watch a woman indulge her psychopathy. It's, you know, she did a thing that is not really morally sound, and then goes to great lengths to cover her tracks. And I enjoyed watching how awful she was willing to be.
Yeah, she was pretty awful. Most of the characters in the book, I think, were pretty awful. But June was especially awful. I agree with everybody. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really fun. I thought it was really fun the second time through. I didn't read any reviews. I looked at a couple reviews today, and it seems like most of them were pretty positive. But everybody seemed to ding her was they thought it was too on the nose.
That's interesting.
What do you mean by that?
Well, that it was just too, all the things that she was, the situations were too obvious. Everything was too obvious, I guess. A lot of the drama took place on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, if I understand what that means, I disagree because there was a sort of a, you know, to sound like a English professor again, there was a negative capability to the book where it was like everything was sort of like I didn't think of her for most of my experience of the book as a bad person, although clearly she was, but I could always justify her actions as almost as well as she could justify her actions. So that doesn't seem like on the nose to me if you can create a book where the hero is a plagiarist.
Yeah. Right? Well, did you root for her?
I did.
Yeah. How about Barb? Did you root for her?
I had a lot of empathy for her and sympathy for her. I get it, you know. I
wanted to see terrible things happen to her.
Oh, that's,
I didn't
that's
like
so
her
interesting because yeah. I didn't. I thought it was a really interesting moral situation. But also I mean, I'm the world's great reviser. I revise, revise, revise. So I know from personal experience the difference between an early draft and a later draft. And I, you know, I could really see how, I don't know, you know, the book that she wrote was, in a sense, her own. Her awful thing was to have stolen it in the first place. And she should never have done that. I don't think it made her a bad person. I think it made her a morally weak person. But I would go back and forth. You know, sometimes I would hate her, sometimes not.
I'll tell you how I think she was a bad person was in the scene with Athena's mother when she goes there specifically to manipulate this poor grieving woman from sharing the notes.
Right.
That was terrible.
Really stressed me out. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I agree with you about that.
And
totally.
Of course, you almost need that scene because the rest of her, I mean, to my reading, you almost need that scene because it was a scene that reminded me that this was an awful thing. You know what I mean? It's a struggle that I have personally with plagiarism. This is like when people get docked for plagiarism, it always seems to me like they're just getting. It's just about their fundamental laziness, right? Like when you plagiarize something poorly enough to where other people notice, it's like you couldn't have spent another couple hours just fudging that so that no one would know that you stole it from this other book.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And if she had done what she did without stealing the manuscript, waited for Athena to if Athena had lived, waited for it to be published and then rewritten it, it wouldn't have been plagiarism. I mean, I was confident that her revision of the book, I mean, maybe I'm a sucker, but was fairly substantial. You know what I mean?
Well, I thought it was, too.
Yeah. Of course. She told us so.
Well, right.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tracy.
That's true.
Is she an unreliable narrator?
By definition, yeah.
Probably, yeah. Probably.
But, I mean, if I want to rewrite The Sun Also Rises page for page, that's okay as long as I'm not lazy about it.
Yeah, but she, I mean, are you going to use the same setting and the same characters as The Sun Also Rises?
But you would acknowledge it. You would say that that's what you
were
doing.
Whether I acknowledged it or not, it doesn't matter. It's not plagiarism. I mean, it's not plagiarism if I do the substantial work of rewriting the book.
So are you saying she was not a plagiarist?
I'm saying that one of the million interesting things about the book was that the plagiarism was in taking the book taking the manuscript out of the typewriter and not telling anybody what she was doing, right? And that if she had, you know, gone to the publisher and said, listen, I was Athena's best friend. I want to rewrite this and we'll share the credit. That would have been an entirely different story.
Well,
there would have been no story.
Well, yeah. Right. So, Tracy.
So, it was one act. It was one act.
Yeah. If she had done that, let's say June had confiscated the manuscript, rewritten it, and then take it to the publisher and said, this was my friend's manuscript. She gave it to me as she was, it was her dying wish that I should edit this.
I mean, that's still a pretty bold lie, don't you think?
It's a bold lie. Yes, it is. But is that okay?
No.
No.
Thank you.
But I will tell you, I don't think that it is important to stress originality. I don't think that anything is really original. So I'm not clinging to that as an argument against what she did. It's just the subterfuge and the terrible acts that came on the heels of having taken the manuscript that make me think she's horrid.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about what her justifications were. I have a list of them here. One was that the book needed a lot of work and she put in the work. Dan, I think that is to your point. She put in the work, so it's her work. If someone had just found it and published it, it would have tarnished Athena's legacy. That was one justification. Another one was that Athena would have been into it. if her ghost had seen what was going on, she would have thought it was super cool.
Yeah.
And the last one was that it was payback for the things Athena took from her.
Yeah. Well, I mean, of course, all of that is bull, right? All of that is just a justification for a bad act. But they're all interesting. They're interesting things to say, because in a sense, or how do you say this? It's like by the reckoning of a lot of people in the literary community, what Athena did to her at Yale was just as bad.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, that is reminiscent of like cat people, cat person.
Yeah.
Or who is the bad art friend? Those, you know, kind of big literary stories.
I don't personally feel that way. I feel like that if someone tells you a story, you're entitled to rip it off, you know?
Well, and I think, right. I mean, and I think that's the, and in fact, I looked at who is the bad art friend. Actually, the court case was settled like this year, this fall.
It was finally.
It was. Mm-hmm. And the judge came down on the side of the writer woman, not the woman who gave her kidney. Mm-hmm. As just as that, I mean, it was like fair use of whatever the story was. Does anyone feel like that's stealing? Like, Barb, if I tell you a story of my life and then you go put that in a story, I have two questions. One, is that bad? And two, is it bad only if I'm a writer?
Oh, that's really interesting. You mean the person who's telling me the story is a writer?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's morally not so great either way, unless you ask that person and you say, I mean, I guess it depends. To me, it would depend on what you want to do with it, whether or not that person, whether it's you see it as the seed of a story or whether you're going to take the whole thing and that's the story.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two different things to me. I mean, I thought it was really interesting that second plagiarism where she just stole that beginning of a story, but then whatever she did with it was really truly hers. I mean, it was a trigger. It was like almost like a writing exercise that you would give to somebody, and so that felt different to me. It just didn't feel so tangled up or something. I think if you're going to use somebody's story, you maybe should let them know, depending on who that person is, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I all these questions don't seem to have clear answers to me.
Yeah. Dan, any
clarity? Well, I mean, if I was in that situation it was a friend and I wanted to preserve the friendship, I would say, you know, Barb, I'm writing that story you told me. Are you okay with that? If it was just somebody that I heard telling the story, I wouldn't even ask that much.
I feel the same way.
But I don't think it's plagiarism. I think a lot of people would think it was plagiarism because they overemphasize the idea.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the first paragraph that the beginning that she stole, that was plagiarism. I mean, she just lifted it up and put it in her own story.
Right.
And that, to me, I mean, I know plagiarism is more complex than that, but that's a pretty clear case of it. But when you start talking about ideas and, you know, using it to generate something else, then it gets really, really gray in my mind.
Yeah. Tracy, have you ever stolen somebody's life and put it in a story?
No, but I'd do it in a heartbeat.
I figured you would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've taken lines.
Yeah. Well, sure. I mean, that's what writers do, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just want to remind everyone we're listening to Radio Free Book Club. We're talking about R.F. Kuang's novel, Yellow Face. What do we think of Athena? Anybody have any impressions of Athena?
Well, this is where this is the only part that I really considered the unreliability of the narrator. For one thing, they seemed like good friends.
Yeah,
and so June just kept saying, "Well, we weren't that close," and I was like, "Yeah, you spend a lot of time together for people that aren't that close,
right?"
And so if I think about it, I don't know what to make of her point of view on Athena. I mean, she sort of wants to represent Athena as a little bit of a, what do the kids call it? Basic, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure I believe her.
Yeah. Tracy, what was your impression of Athena?
I mean, honestly, she seemed fine. She just got lucky and had early success. But she, in the very small parts where she was in the book, she seemed as flabbergasted by the whole thing as anyone.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting how many people seemed to dislike her.
I didn't like her very much.
Yeah, I didn't. But that was also the narrator's opinion,
no,
right?
No, I mean, I felt like she... I think if you're that successful and you're among other writers, you need to be a little bit sensitive. You know, I mean, you really do.
Right.
It's hard when people, even the people you really love, you know, it's not jealousy. It's just you want these things so much for yourself. And it hurts you that you don't, you know, yet again, they're not there for you. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, so I felt like she was not a very sensitive person in terms of, I thought she was kind of braggy. And I thought she was kind of cold. But I thought it was very interesting. And the example she gave of, like, when they were at the museum and there she was over there, you know, talking to this mm-hmm. this guy, which I didn't have any problem with at all because I might have done the same thing.
Yeah.
Or less morally, you know, eavesdropped on something to get, you know, information that I wanted. But I in that made me not exactly like her more, but see that's she was a writer. She was focused. She was doing, that was the only way she maybe knew how to live.
Right. And then the way that the things like that got twisted around to be something, you know, I was supposed to be mad about. I was like, oh, no, I think she's fine. It's okay to go talk to somebody and tell the story.
Yeah. And, you know, she was very focused on her career, I think, in a way that probably June wasn't.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, she was focused on her career, and mm-hmm. June was focused on her career.
And she seemed, and I also noticed she paid for drinks.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And right. that she seemed to be the one that was supporting the relationship
yes.
more than June. She was the one like, let's go do something, let's get together, let's chat. It seemed that way to me.
Yep, it's true.
Well, June was terribly jealous, obviously.
Yeah.
But I agree with that, Dan. It's interesting, though, how much jealousy there was, like at the end when Candace says something like, everybody hated that or something
right.
like that. Right?
Yeah.
Right. She was the one successful Asian American woman author. Everybody needed one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, and then there were some interesting sort of complications around that in terms of some things that people said about, well, you know, they just wanted her to be this one thing. They didn't really want her to get out of that little box that they had made for her. And that made me sympathetic toward her because I think that is probably true.
Yeah.
That wouldn't surprise me at
yeah.
all.
I mean, really, as if Asian is one thing.
Yeah,
is
exactly.
It, right.
Right.
As if even Chinese is one thing.
Right. As anything is one thing.
Right.
Or anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. So beyond June, were there any other likable characters in here? Is there anyone else you liked?
Just one more thing about the two of them. Neither one of them had any friends. Which,
yeah, that's true.
Which I thought was interesting. One, to me, that was a little bit of a, not exactly a flaw in the book, but I sort of at some point realized that I just had to suspend something to allow myself to believe that, you know, these two people had zero friends, that there was nobody in their lives at all.
Well, it seemed to me like one of the places that I started to dislike the book, but then pulled myself back from that, is that there were a lot of conveniences in the book.
Yeah.
And I think that the lack of friends is certainly a convenience, because when you get rid of all those other people, then you don't have other voices
right.
informing and going,
yeah.
what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
Or, you know, I mean, you
yeah.
You talk like you didn't know Athena. You guys were hanging out all the time. She was like your only, you know, there's nobody to contradict the structure that June is proposing.
Well, not only that, but Athena used a typewriter.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Who uses a typewriter?
Athena wasn't on social media.
Right.
Athena had no beta readers. Athena gave no interviews. So
right.
Athena never told anyone about what she was working on.
Right.
So everything came together really nicely for June.
Mm-hmm. Very easy.
Yeah. So how accurately do you think the book depicts the current state of publishing? Dan?
Well, again, that's like a, it's sort of a weird question because again, I think of the book as a primer more than, you know, more than documentary. It's like, it's like she uses it to leverage or, you know, to sort of carve out issues with the publishing industry. I mean, does it, like, you know, how do I say this? Everybody has to have, you know, one, you know, Asian American writer.
Right.
And that may be true in the way that she says it. But my overwhelming experience is that the publishing industry doesn't often publish bad books. And so when they publish a book from some category that, you know, does them good in the DEI world, it's a good book. I just don't think they're in the business of publishing bad books because they, and so to the extent that the novel seems to be proposing that it's hard, you know, that June had a harder time publishing than Athena did. No, I just think Athena was a better writer than June.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm not sure I agree with that.
Yeah.
I think they publish a lot of mediocre books. And I think that there are, I don't know, it just seems way more tangled up than that in a lot of ways.
Well, it certainly seems to be true that publishers decide what books are going to be hits.
Yes, no. I remember that line in the book where she was talking, and it reminded me of conversations we've had in here where we've read books that were real stinkers, and then all the reviews are great. And there was a line in there where she said, because June had the novel that tanked, and then she had the novel that was clearly going to be a success. And her experience with her team was extremely different. And she says something about how she's seeing that bestsellers don't just happen. Bestsellers are made. And I think there probably is a lot of truth to that.
I don't believe that. I've watched the publishing industry just throw a lot of money after books that they can't turn into bestsellers. And I think that, you know, that's true to a certain extent, but I think that the June 2nd book was a success because it was a better book. I'll die on that hill. I mean, the book that she wrote with Athena was a better book.
Oh, I would totally agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that she had the team because the book justified the team.
But do you think there are also writers who are less successful, who are just great writers, who are less successful because they haven't been well published or well promoted?
Yes.
Yep.
I do.
I think it's true to a certain extent, but then there's a lot of, if the publishing industry could make bestsellers, they would make bestsellers all the time. I don't think they can do it. I think they have to have a certain kind of book that they can promote. And you know, are there, I mean, I was just listening to a podcast a little while ago and God, who was it? I can't remember who said it. I think it was a writer. He said, oh no, it wasn't a writer. It was Rick Rubin. Rick Rubin said, all those books, all those records that came out on 9/11, that wasn't anybody's fault. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was just like all this cultural material that just went down the toilet because the culture couldn't, you know what I mean? And Ruben said, and I believe he knows what he's talking about. He said, careers were destroyed.
I'm sure that's true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And coincidence.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I, you know.
Right, because it was a Tuesday release day.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it's all true. I mean, what you're saying is true on some level, and the other stuff is true on some level. It certainly seems like certain people are chosen, and they receive that kind of attention for a book that might or might not be better than all of the other books that are coming out of that place on any given day. I'm constantly wondering about that. You know, I'll read a book and I just think, why didn't anybody pay attention to this book, you know, as opposed to that book, which I also liked, but I didn't feel like there was that much difference between the quality of the writing, the originality, all that. You know, sometimes there's a timely topic and then you think, well, yeah, you get that. But I think it's just kind of a mess. I don't think they really know what they want. I think the marketing people, from my understanding, make a lot of the decisions that editors used to make in terms of, you mm-hmm. know, what books get bought as well as how they are marketed. And they're not necessarily readers.
I don't, you know, I disagree. My experience of it is that there's this multicellular organism called a publisher, and that when books are successful, it's mostly because all the people in that company who read came to an agreement that this was a great book.
Okay, and James Patterson.
you're applying. You're applying standards to Patterson that you want Patterson to be playing a game that he's not playing.
Well,
he's an airport novel. He's not the kind of book that we read. Is he succeeding on the terms of an airport novel? I think he is, and I think that the people that read him are
they love him. And I get it. I see what you're saying. That's an interesting way of looking at it. That makes me agree with you more, but not totally.
Well, it's just that like with you know that books come through and they have different purposes, and I think that when a book is a bestseller, you can usually tell the year before because everybody in that company loves it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're talking about R.F. Kuang's novel Yellowface here on Radio Free Book Club. So let's talk a little bit about one of the hot button issues in the book, which is cultural appropriation. Was June writing outside her lane?
I have such a hard time with this question. I don't know. It's fiction. On the one hand, you should be able to just do whatever you want. It's fiction. I should be able to write from the perspective of a man, etc.
Toni Morrison said we can.
Well,
serious.
There you go. I'll take it.
I'll take it, too. I don't think there should be a lane. I think you have the right to imagine anything. And if you don't imagine it very well, that's your problem. And people probably won't buy your book.
Yeah.
Dan?
Yeah, I just feel like this is one of the things where I just can't possibly have an opinion. I just try to hide in the corner.
Yeah. Right.
Probably wise.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you certainly, I mean, and this goes back to the discussion the two of you were really having about the quality of what gets published. Hmm. You know, if a white writer writes a compelling book about Chinese immigrants, is that keeping some Chinese American person from telling the story? Or did she just write a great book?
Well,
like,
see,
that's the American dirt question,
But this is what's interesting to me about the publishing industry right now. I just think that, you know, the editors and publishers are hoping for the next great Mexican-American novel. Mm-hmm. So I'm sort of confident that if there had been a novel out there that at that time in that place, that was better than American Dirt, written by a Mexican American, that would have been the novel that was published. So it's like, I feel like, you know, yeah, I'm about to get myself into trouble, so I'm going to shut up.
Oh, go ahead.
I think you're defending the quality of the work that gets published the way you have throughout this whole discussion.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, that at least at this moment in time, I don't believe anybody's getting pushed out of a lane that they belong in, because people wake up in New York every morning and pray for a novel, a culturally appropriate novel by a culturally appropriate writer, that's what they want.
Yeah.
And so that if a good book comes through, they're overjoyed. You know?
Yep.
So, okay. We've all just agreed that anyone can write anything, but I'm thinking about this in terms of my ex-husband, who is Eritrean, and I have spent a lot of time with his Eritrean family, and they have fascinating stories and a perspective that, you know, probably very few people here in the Midwest have gotten to have. But if I were to write a novel from the perspective of, say, his mother, I would feel really squicked out about it. It just feels weird. Do you know what I mean?
But yeah, totally. I think you need to know what you can do. I mean, what's within, not exactly your comfort level, but your ability as a human being sort of to imagine. There are certain things I know I can't imagine. And so like that, I wouldn't even try. I don't think I could do it. And then there are other things I feel confident that I can imagine. And so I go there.
I would totally encourage you to write that book. It's just that you just have to be aware of the culture that you're writing it into. You know what I mean? There's a dumb way to write that book.
Right.
And there's a smart way to write that book.
Yeah.
And when you bring it, you know, and part of the job of the editor is that when you sell the amazing novel that you've written, the editor will say, listen, this thing that you're doing in chapter 3, you can't do it. You can't do that as a white woman. We're going to have to change that.
Speaking of which, I was a little bit perplexed by why June was so ardently opposed to having the, call it?
The sensitivity reader.
Yeah, sensitivity reader.
That was another convenience.
Yeah.
We needed that to get the what's-her-name pissed off.
Oh, Candace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was just a device. Because you're right. If she had gotten the sensitivity reader, that would have helped enormously and maybe even avoided the whole problem.
Yeah.
But then the novel would have been over.
Yeah.
But the problems didn't come from what was in the novel.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, it seemed as if she wrote the novel, then the novel itself and whatever she did in terms of those cultural things, nobody was having any problem with that.
Well, no,
it was
that's
just
not
that
true.
She, no?
No,
what did
there
I
were,
miss?
There were Asian writers and Asian critics who had a lot of trouble with her having done the novel at all.
Well, I totally agree with that. But what I'm saying is I don't remember anything where they said specifically, you got this part wrong because you were a white person. They didn't, there wasn't that. And
I remember it because she said, Athena wrote that.
Right.
Remember
right.
She said
it was one of the white characters who people were having a problem with.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a white character that was kind of a rescuer. And, and June said, I didn't write that.
Oh, right. You mean the white savior kind of thing.
It was pretty successful.
Yeah.
Factually, there was a lot of blowback.
Yeah. Yeah.
From that direction.
Well, and you know, back to that thing, what you said about your ex-mother-in-law. I think, you know, when you're writing from a point of view that is not so familiar to you, what I have found is that if you just see it in your mind and you write what you see and what you hear as opposed to the interior stuff. And if you can capture that, everything comes with it, it seems. So, yeah. could probably do it. I bet you could.
Yeah, my guess would be to make, you know, it's just like make yourself the protagonist, you know, a figure like Tracy Kumbe, and you're good. You know what I mean? You're by definition staying in your lane, experiencing Eritrean culture.
So I guess I take from all this that we all think it's okay that R.F. Kuang wrote Yellowface in the persona of Jim.
Even though she's a...
Yeah, but see, that's... yes.
I think that's really that's kind of point. A wonderful irony, right?
But she's so smart. I mean, she's so smart, this writer, because at the same time, probably... I never took June seriously as a character. I took her seriously as a marionette on R.F. Kuang's strings.
Yeah, yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Because every once in a while I go, oh, that's right, she's white. I would forget that she was white.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So are you, I mean, there's a lot of jealousy plays a big role in the book. Are you guys jealous of other writers?
Jealous, but it's a hard thing for me to explain. It isn't jealousy. There's a little bit of, there's some envy sometimes, but mainly for me, it just brings to me where I would like to be. And I don't really even mean the money, the whatever, but it's the validation.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's the validation.
Sure. Yeah.
I want to be Sally Rooney so bad.
Oh, so I'd be Kathleen Rooney.
Yeah. Dan, any?
I want to be Sally Rooney too.
Sure.
I have a very a close friend right now who's just about to hit huge, and I tell him, I say, you know, I spent 4 minutes last month hating your guys. But part of the thing with him, and I think that this is one of the things that was conveniently left out of the relationship between June and Athena, is that I know how hard my friend works.
Yeah.
And I know what went into his success. And so it's not mysterious to me, or it doesn't seem unwarranted.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and you get over it, you know, and it, both things are true at the same time. You're happy for the person. You think, oh, you know, wish it was me or whatever.
Yeah.
But you respect the work that they did.
Yeah.
And that's important.
Yeah. I read a lot of writers who I read and I go that, you know, there's no way I could do that. But the thing that comes to mind for me is I would read Philip Roth and I would go, wow, there's a lot of things that are possible. And then I would read Saul Bellow and go, yeah, I just should just hang it up.
That's what I feel sometimes too. Like, why am I even trying this? This is so good.
Exactly. So at one point, June kind of becomes, this is a very minor thing, but she becomes a darling of Fox News.
Yeah.
To paraphrase, she says, should we not be celebrating the scamming of racist rednecks?
Yeah.
What isn't that the Fox News model?
Yeah. I mean, exactly.
Is there anything to that? Anyone want to scam racist rednecks?
Well, no, I just don't want anything to do with them at all. No, thanks.
Yeah. Let's talk about the ending a little bit and the build up to the ending. So, like, she had decided she was going to out herself, right? That was
and
her.
And then remind me what happened.
Well, and then
she was
Candace.
Right.
Then Candace hijacked her and got her on tape outing herself. So that was going to be Candace's new book, new bestseller. So, but what June was going to do was come on the back end and undermine Candace,
right.
Who had left her, you know, sprawled and passed out on the steps, and what a bad person she was. So,
but before. The thing with Candace, she decided she was going to write this story.
She was going to out herself, and it was going to be her
biggest
book.
Yeah, and she was writing it, and she was really engaged.
Why didn't she want to do that? I think the novel just, another convenience. Why didn't she just do that?
Well,
she was doing that.
She was doing it.
But what stopped her from...
Candace.
Candace outed her then.
But Candace.
Candace surprised her.
But doesn't that even make it even a better book?
Well, yes, because she was going to. Well, but Candace had already sold it.
But it didn't make this a better book.
Candace had already sold it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Candace had already gone to a publisher that I have the inside scoop.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
Tracy, you buying it?
It was kind of a mess of an ending, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of felt like she needed a way out.
Yeah, there was that elaborate setup with Candace, and I got a little confused at the end. I didn't quite follow. Didn't stick the landing, I think.
I would have been in favor of a happy ending in which she makes publishing history by writing this memoir of her experience of plagiarism. I thought that would have been good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Come clean.
Yeah. Well, she was going to come clean. She was going to surf the wave on the back end, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Barb, what'd you think?
There was so much stuff going on in this book. I sort of felt like maybe at some point she just thought, what the hell? Like, how am I going to end this? And I mean, Candace sort of disappeared for a really long time.
Yeah.
And then for her to come back and be, you know, so dead set on destroying her.
Is there anyone you're dead set on destroying her? Like, I don't have the energy to maintain a grudge over years like that.
I know. Me either.
Well, but you're not famous. You know what I mean? I think that there's a... Wait, I got that all confused, but famous people have people like that in their
lives.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, yeah, because it's just this thing where... If you've got a resentment against somebody who's, you know, the flavor of the month, you're getting hit by that all the time. Your resentment is getting reactivated all the time. And so those people, you know.
Well, the truth is she was right because she questioned the book from the get-go.
Yep.
And then she ended up losing her career as a result. So, I can see why she would have been angry.
Yeah, how important is social media to writers today?
I hope it's not as important as they say. I'm not very good at it.
Seems pretty huge. I don't know. I follow a lot of writers, though. They seem to maintain a pretty rigorous schedule of posting.
Yeah. On Twitter?
You know, I'm mostly on Instagram these days.
Yeah.
Yeah, my sense is that everything's moved to Instagram.
Yeah.
How important do you think it is?
I don't know.
Me neither.
I think my attitude towards social media has always been that the people who benefit the most from social media are the people who love social media. So the writers that I know that have big followings seem to enjoy social media. So it's like it's hard to when somebody says to me or. When someone says, well, you know, you have to have a huge following on Twitter in order to publish a book, it's like, well, people routinely try to drum up huge followings on Twitter to no avail.
Yeah.
I mean, who's a good example of that? I can't think of somebody, but there's a lot of writers that are just really, really good at it because they love it, you know? Mm-hmm. They love posting.
Yeah. Okay. What do we think? Would we recommend the book, Tracy?
I had a great time reading this book. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would recommend it.
Yeah.
I thought it was a gas.
Yeah. Dan?
It's a great book and it also sort of speaks to something that I love about novels as opposed to other kinds of cultural enterprises is that it's a mess and it doesn't matter. It's just like a great book and half of the stuff in here I don't even believe, and I don't care.
Yeah.
You know?
In a way, not unlike James Patterson.
Yeah.
I guess it just depends on the audience. All right, okay,
yeah.
I don't know about that. But
what do you think,
Barb? I loved it. I thought it was great, and I liked it the second time. I don't often read books twice, but I had read it quite a while ago.
Yeah.
So I thought I probably ought to give it another shot.
Yeah, I agree.
I liked it the second time.
Yeah, I did too.
I think it was structurally worked really well, and I did the second time around, really. I saw that more. How it just moved from one phase, you know, to the next.
Yeah. Well, it is a rare Radio Free Book Club where we all like the book.
Oh, my gosh. This
might be it's a new year.
Wow.
Tomorrow okay, and then. Tomorrow and tomorrow, I think, was the last one.
I like that one, too.
Yeah. Okay, who has a recommendation of a book that someone else might like to read? Barb, you have one?
How to Build a Boat.
How to Build a Boat by...
I knew you were going to ask me that. I can't remember the name. It's an Irish novel. I've been reading a lot of Irish writers that are just really wonderful. It's
Sally
good.
Sally Rooney.
Yeah, I like Sally Rooney, but others too. In Memoriam, who's that? Did you read that? Did anybody read that?
Mm-mm.
World War I book. Wow. Alice Wynn, I think. Both of those are really good.
Hmm. Thank you, Barb. Mm-hmm. Dan, you have a recommendation?
The only recommendation I have is a book that I'm in the middle of right now, which is I sound very professorial when I say this, but it's a biography of William James called William James in the Maelstrom of American Modernism.
Wow, that does sound professorial.
Yeah, and it's an amazingly readable book, and it gives me the overview of William James that I have always wanted. So
awesome. That sounds great. Tracy.
I am very, very late to this party, but I picked up Alison Bechdel's graphic memoir Funhouse recently, and it's phenomenal.
It is.
Yeah. What do you like about it?
It's an interesting mix of being vulnerable and forthcoming and holding a lot back. It's very reserved in how psychotic her household was. It's, you know, where our narrator in this book was just constantly professing her innocence and justifying her actions and stuff. This book is just very calmly and clearly showing you some deranged family dynamics.
Yeah. Wow. Do you read graphic novels?
Almost never. I don't know what came
anybody
over me picking it up.
Anybody else read graphic novels?
Not really, but I did love that.
I think I've recommended this book before here. Good Talk by Mira Jacob is a graphic memoir. I mean, it's an amazing book. I've read it like four times.
Yeah, that sounds cool. I read one or two a year, but yeah, that's about it.
Glasstown is cool. It's a kind of take on the Brontes. It's
you know,
neat.
I get distracted by the pictures. I'm such a word person. Yeah. I feel like I'm supposed to study every cell.
Yeah.
So I get really, you know, zoomed in on it.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, they're more like a movie than a novel. Yeah, so I'm going to recommend one of my favorite books that I read last year. As I said, I don't get jealous of writers too much, but this one in particular just made me just want to throw up my hands and say, I will not have anything this important to say that I'm going to say this well. And that was Percival Everett's novel, The Trees, that came out in 2021. It's set mostly in a small town in Mississippi, and it's about the murders of some white men who are related to Carolyn Bryant, who was the woman whose accusations led to the lynching of Emmett Till. And what happens is these guys are murdered, and they find next to the body of an unidentified black man. Who then mysteriously disappears from the morgue, who bears some resemblance to Emmett Till. Anyway, it's really funny, and it's really horrible, and it's really insightful, and I liked it a lot. It's The Trees by Percival Everett, and that is about it for us. You can find the notes for all of this, for this and all of our other shows on the Radio Free Book Club blog on medium.com. Please think about following us. Drop us a note on Facebook. Stream the show wherever you listen to podcasts. We're always interested in hearing from you, what you think about the book, what you think about the show. Our show is produced for 99.1 WQRTLP by the always awesome Mario Jones. For Dan Barden, Tracy Kumbe, Barb Shoup, and all the members of Radio Free Book Club, I'm Ken Honeywell. Thanks for listening, and join us next month when we'll be digging into one of last year's best-reviewed books, Nana Kwame Adjei-Brenya's Chain Gang All-Stars. Until then, read a book.